Good evening. Thanks for coming in. I know I'm the one who is stopping you from enjoying a nice weather out there, better than yesterday, and the drinks at 6 o'clock. So we'll try to finish in time and hope you can enjoy the rest of the evening. My name is Sanjay Mishra. I work in the SQL Server product team, and I work in a team called Customer Advisory Team, and that's why you see the prefix SQL CAT. And the job of my team is to advise customers on best practices, on architectures, on design solutions to meet the customer's needs. And in return, what we learn is what is missing in the product, how to improve the product, how to make the product better. For the best part of last couple of years, my main job has been to actually represent you in our always-on development team, to be your voice, to ensure that your asks, your requirement, your needs for high availability and disaster recovery are addressed in the SQL Server Denali Always On, which is SQL Server 2012. If you see your requirements have been met, if you see your needs have been addressed, I'm pleased, I'm humbled, I'm honored. If they're not, then I will welcome a discussion and I'll be in the booth for a major part of the time, almost throughout the day, and I'll be happy to talk to you. And then we also have a customer panel where real customers who are deploying these solutions that we talked today in production, they'll be talking how they have successfully deployed and what lessons they have learned. So with this, we move on to talk about high availability design patterns, architectures, and best practices. As I mentioned a little while back, for people who were not there, I'll repeat it. The talk is about the design patterns and architectures for HA and DR solutions. The talk is not about the fundamentals of individual features within the always-on product suite. For example, I'll not be deep diving into how availability group works. I'll not be deep diving into failover clustering instances, how they work. But I'll be using these as tools to build end-to-end HA-DR solutions that meets mission critical application needs to achieve high availability as well as DR. For the purpose of this presentation, I know sometimes high availability and DR terms used in a much general, sometimes overloaded way, but I'm just setting the expectation. For purpose of this presentation, when I say refer to high availability or HA, I'm usually talking about protection within a data center. And when I'm talking about DR, I'm talking about ensuring availability when a data center goes down. Pretty general, but just wanted to make sure that we are all on the same page. How many of you have some kind of high availability deployment in your for your applications? I bet most of you. And how many of you have also disaster recovery deployments? Some of you. How many of you who do not have disaster recovery deployments wish that you had disaster recovery deployments? Did I make it? How many of you, those who do not have a disaster recovery solution in place, wish you had a disaster recovery solution for your application? How many of you? Very few, okay. And I know what that response means. Sometimes we are embarrassed to express our wish, but that's okay. How many of you wish that when you designed your local HA solution, you also had thought about how will my DR solution work if it was planned at the same time? A lot of people design and deploy this in a fragmented way. They do the HA and then later on retrofit DR, which is okay, which is doable. But if you had spent time and looked into the entire solution, even if you do not deploy that today, but you have thought about it, that would make you a much better, that would put you in a much better place for operation, for monitoring, for understanding the technology, for training your stuff, for a lot of stuff. So this topic is about how to think about HA and DR solution end-to-end. Protection within data center, protection across data center. Think about from ground up as one unit. And then you think about what you deploy when, how, which part you migrate when, and how. And what are the solutions that SQL Server provides? Moving on, a few clarity on terminology. How many of you think that availability group and always on are the one and the same? thankfully nobody, they are not the same. Always on is not equal to availability group. Then what is always on? Always on is an umbrella of HADR technologies which were introduced or enhanced in SQL Server 2012. That means always on is a superset of SQL Server failover cluster instances which has been tremendously improved from the previous versions of failover cluster instances and availability groups. So when somebody is talking about always on, they are talking about either or both of these two technologies. And availability groups is not equal to database mirroring. Database mirroring has been a very successful HADR technology in the past. Availability group goes beyond that. And database mirroring does exist in SQL Server 2012, but it's a different technology than availability group. And as you probably have seen it, availability groups comes with a lot of added advantages. For example, you can have multiple secondaries, the secondaries can be readable, you can fail over a group of databases altogether. So all those functionalities come with availability group. They do not come with database mirroring, just to make sure. So if somebody is using a word readable mirror, nothing like that exists. A readable secondary of availability group exists. A mirror can be readable only through a database snapshot. Then you are reading the database snapshot, not the mirror. So don't use the term readable mirror, say readable secondary or active secondary as if you attended the previous session today. Okay, moving on from there, now that the set has been staged and a lot of you have stayed here, so I assume that I'll hope to fulfill most of your expectations. What are the always on HADR design patterns? What I'm going to show you, what are the design patterns that we see today mostly being deployed or mostly being considered, and what are the solution characteristics, and if there was a corresponding solution for pre-SQL Server 2000 deployments. And a database HADR, the most significant thing is the database. And the database means storage. How is a database HADR different from any other HADR? Because database stores data. Database is persistent. When you have persistent things to maintain, you have to ensure that you have other copies available. You have other copies available or accessible within the data center. You have other copies available outside data centers. That's what differentiates between other technologies which do not have anything persistent. For example, web servers. Many web servers have nothing persistence in those. You can put a bunch of those. One of them goes out, another comes in, comes back. It's not an impactful because there is no concept of data loss there. Because if you provide a SQL Server high availability, 100% availability with 100% data loss, how many of you take it? So along with availability or uptime goes with an implicit expectation on data loss. You will be able to maintain the data to some nearest time, and we'll go through those synchronous, asynchronous, we'll talk about those a bit. So that's why it differentiates from other needs for HADR compared to a database HADR and hence SQL Server HADR. So that's why, since it is a storage centric, I'll present these solutions to you from perspective of the storage. It's an interesting perspective, we'll see. One aspect is how your storage is handled by or looked upon by SQL Server. One way to look at it is a shared storage solution. So in SQL Server 2012, we have multi-site failover cluster instances. That means one failover cluster instance spanning across multiple sites and providing you failover capability within a site or across a site, but it's one failover cluster instance. And as you know, failover cluster instances use shared storage. How do you give shared storage across sites? We mask that by using storage replication. And that's a solution that has been existing even in earlier releases of SQL Server. So what's the difference? The difference is that in SQL Server 2012, we have eliminated the need of a stretched VLAN. Earlier, you needed a stretched VLAN to be able to deploy a multi-site failover cluster instance for HADR. In SQL Server 2012, you do not need that anymore. So that's the most significant difference. There are other subtle differences. We'll come to that. And this is shared storage perspective. Of course, the storage cannot be shared because there are two different sites, but storage replication masks that. SQL Server thinks that it's a shared storage. And from the other perspective of completely non-shared storage, you have as many servers, you have as many copies of the data, and those copies you have deployed some in the local data center, some in the remote data center to provide you HA and DR. And that solution is availability group solution, brand new solution in SQL Server 2012. And if you have been using database mirroring, you knew that you could have only one mirror. So if you use database mirroring for your local HA, you are left with log shipping for your DR. So you have to mix two technologies to provide you HA plus DR. And that deployment can be replaced with availability group, because you can have multiple secondaries, and you can have one or more secondaries in the primary data center, one or more second in the DR data center, or if you have many more data center, you can have up to total 5 replicas, one primary plus 4 secondaries. And some people like to mix and match. People have liked to use failover cluster instances in the local data center because it has been there for much longer time. And they have liked the concept of database mirroring for DR. How will that look like with availability group? You can continue to use failover cluster instance for local HA and use availability group just for DR. And if you used failover cluster instances plus database mirroring in the previous releases, then you know that this is the equivalent, or this is the enhancement, or this is the replacement for that in SQL Server 2012. And it's a combined shared storage and non-shared storage. It is shared storage within the data center or within your local data center. It's a non-shared storage with respect to your DR data center. And I'll go deep into each one of those. These are the most fundamental patterns. We have seen a slight variation of this in some deployments. Some people have multiple data centers, some people have multiple secondaries, some people try to, but these are the three core design patterns for HA and DR. I'll stop a moment and take any questions now before I move on. Okay, good. So please do not miss this session on Wednesday. The design patterns that I'm going to talk, you will see the real practical production deployments of that, not by me, I'll be just the host, but by real customer talking about the presentation. So this is a customer panel on real production deployments. I welcome all of you to that presentation. Okay, so we'll move on to our first design pattern, which is using multi-site FCI for HA as well as DR. And how does it look like? This looks like, is the graphics visible everywhere? My apologies for the combination of lighting, the background, some of the colors chosen may be a little bit, if that I can explain if you have any confusion. But what we have here is a two sites, primary site, DR site, and across the two sites you have one Windows cluster. And on one Windows cluster you have one failover cluster instance. There are four nodes, two nodes in each data center. Two nodes in the primary data center provide you local high availability. In case of a failure on one node, SQL Server can fail over to the other node. And if the entire data center fails, SQL Server can fail over to the remote site. And there are also two nodes on the remote site. You can have a slight variations of this. You can have different number of nodes, different number of data centers. But this is the basic concept design. If you see, there is a storage replication that is taking care of copying the data behind the scene of SQL Server from primary data center to the DR data center. And from SQL Server point of view, this is a shared storage solution masked by storage replication. So if you're deploying this solution, you will be talking to your storage vendor. You are probably using a SAN, and the SAN also, along with the SAN, you also have SAN replication. You have SAN at two sites, not just one site, you have SAN at two sites, and you have SAN replication going between the two sites. So you are probably talking to your storage vendor to get the SAN replication software. Also, one more software needed on top of it is called Cluster Enabler, which ensures that when the failover happens between the sites, the storage devices on one side, they go offline, and another side come online. Because in this case, the storage devices on the DR site are offline all the time. They're always all through taking the replication traffic from the primary site. And when the failover happens, this cluster enabler software is responsible for switching at the storage level, and then SQL Server can take ownership of those storage devices and mount SQL Server on that. Interesting thing to note that this is an instance level HA. That means if a failover happens, it is the whole instance fails over from one server to another server. It's an instance level DR also. You'll see the difference when we go to the other solutions. You'll see the difference that failover for DR, how it is changing. And this uses a storage application. You can have local HA as well as DR both automatic if you want, if you like. Many customer or most customer we talk to do not, they definitely want local automatic failover, but do not really want a DR failover, because DR process not only involves SQL Server failover, it involves dozens of other things to failover, and therefore they want, they control failover manually. In that case, you can use it that way. If you want a automatic failover between two data center, consider the role of a third data center to become a arbitrator in case one data center goes down. Okay, and we have published a white paper on the link I have provided here, which goes into the details of how this solution works, what are the interesting lessons learned, what are the things of do's and do nots. I'll quickly move on. I just talked about all this stuff. So two key things to think about storage. One thing that it involves storage replication, so be engaged with your storage vendor. Number two is the network. In earlier solutions of this technology, we did not have the ability of something called an OR dependency for the SQL Server network name, the IP address within the SQL Server network name. We have changed that, we have improved. That's the key improvement for this solution in SQL Server 2012. And the OR dependency enables us to eliminate the stretch VLAN and the IP address wherever the SQL Server is online, and that IP address will be online from with respect to the SQL Server network name. And we also use the registered all providers IP, thereby providing faster application failover time in case of a DR. Some interesting considerations when you use this technology. Anybody who has used failover cluster instances knows, or anybody who has failover cluster instances after Windows Server 2008 or Windows Server 2008 R2 know that you have to run something called validation. And one of the validation tests is a storage validation. And in this case, what storage validation will go and do, and will say that, okay, hey, some storage is on one side, another storage is on one side, I cannot see all the storage, and it will flag you that you have probably failed storage validation. And it is okay if you're deploying a multi-site failover cluster instance, it is okay not to pass the storage validation. It is not, don't take my word for that, take the KBU article for that. And once you have run storage validation, there will be a screen that comes, I have failed, so I want to repeat, because as many times you repeat, you're going to get the same one. The other option is to know, I do not require support from Microsoft, and so this is a very strict definition out there. This is to ensure that people run validation and they're running it on a validated Windows cluster. But for this particular solution, for a multi-site failover cluster instance where storage replication is involved, you are not required to pass storage validation to be fully supported. So it's okay to click no and go forward. You are still supported. One more thing that you'll see through this when you're doing validation is what is the Quora model that is being expected of this solution. And the Windows Server will prompt you that your quorum model for this solution is a node and disk majority, which is actually not the right quorum model for this solution. The right quorum model for this solution is either node majority or node plus file share majority, depending on whether if you have total odd number of nodes or even number of nodes. If you have even number of nodes, you can add a file share. Okay, what else? TempDB on local disk. This is a new improvement for failover cluster instances. It does help local failover cluster instances a lot, because now you can have your TempDB outside your SAN storage. You can have TempDB on for applications which are very TempDB sensitive, need a lot of very high performance from TempDB. A lot of customers want to put them on some kind of solid state device which is outside the SAN, and this allows you. However, if you are using multi-site failover cluster instances, this is twice or thrice more benefits, because everything on the SAN for your SQL Server failover cluster instance, you have to replicate it across two sites. And there is no point replicating tempdb, because when SQL Server restarts on your secondary site, the tempdb is wiped off. So you took all the pain of copying all your tempdb for all your tempdb uses, and that was wiped off after failover. So what's the point? And this allows you to have tempdb on the local node so that it is outside your storage replication. That helps two ways. Number one, if your storage replication license is based on how many gigabytes or megabytes or whatever you are replicating, then you save money there. And on top of it, you are saving usage of your bandwidth, because you are not transferring all those tempdb traffic over the network. So this is a very significant benefit if you are using multi-site failover cluster instances. Okay. So that ends the discussion on multi-site failover cluster instances providing HA/NTR. Any questions on this before I move on to the next one? Okay. Thank you. The next solution or next design pattern is using availability groups for HA/NTR. This is a purely non-shared storage based solution. We'll come to another solution which uses availability group in a combined shared and non-shared, but hold on to that for a second. Think of this as a purely non-shared storage. You have as many servers, as many copies of data. Each server has its own copy of data. And that's the solution this one has. You using availability group within the data center to provide local HA. Again, using more secondaries or one or more other secondaries for the same availability group in another data center to provide you a DR copy. And this looks like this. Again, two data centers. You can have more. And as I mentioned, the slight variations are okay. There is one Windows Server failover cluster crossing the two data centers. By this time, you would have already known that availability groups depends on Windows Server failover cluster at its backbone. And that's the fundamental I would say building block or the fundamental infrastructure behind availability groups. However, this Windows Server failover cluster is not the shared storage failover cluster you have been used to. This is a group of machines, and that's it. Shared storage, no shared storage, irrelevant. And in this case, there is no shared storage. And you have two machines in the primary data center, primary and secondary. And because most customers want automated and zero data loss automatic failover within the data center, in this picture what you see is a synchronous secondary in the local data center. And because most customers have DR site far away, and probably the network bandwidth and the latency is not good enough for synchronous data transmission, this diagram shows it asynchronous. You can have synchronous. As you know, for each primary replica, you can have two synchronous replicas and all total four secondary replicas. So if you used two synchronous, you can use two more asynchronous, or you could use all four asynchronous. So in this case, I'm showing one synchronous and one asynchronous, and you could mix and match as long as the technology allows it. And you could even use, if zero data loss is your primary requirement even for DR, and your network and application are okay with the performance impact of a long distance synchronous data copy, you're fine to use that here as well. So this is what it looks like. And as I said, this is a non-shared storage solution. The failover is for the group of databases, which is a group of databases within the availability group. You can have one or more user databases within availability group. Again, system databases are outside availability group. It's the same unit for HA, the same unit for DR. So what to do with system databases? Same thing that you did with database mirroring technologies, that you either script or make sure that you have the ability to copy your logins or your jobs or other things that reside outside user databases, make a copy of that in your DR data center also. Except one thing, SQL Server 2012 introduces something called contained databases, and contained databases can contain the logins. So if you are using logins and that you want to contain within your database, you can define your user database to be a contained database, and if the contained database is part of the availability group, then availability group failover will take care of failing over of your logins, but that's logins only. You may have other objects outside the user database for which you need to plan outside the availability group failover. Okay, and this is solution where with a local replica or dear replica, any of the secondaries can be active secondaries. You can use them for backup, you can use them for read reporting. So this gives you on top of HA and DR, this can be used as a read scale out solution, and I know some customer using this as a read scale out solution as well. You have a question? Yes.
Are the write semantics the same as in SAN-based replication?
The question is, are the write semantics the same as SAN-based replication? There is slight difference. SAN-based replication works at the block level for your learns, which are data as well as log. The semantics for availability groups is like database mirroring, where only the log is being transferred and applied on the secondary. So the transfer is a smaller subset, only the logs, but the logs have to be applied when on the secondary.
Okay, so the write isn't acknowledged back to the primary, waiting for the secondary. There's no dependency.
So the question is there any dependency for write acknowledged? For synchronous, the write has to happen on the log of the secondary, synchronous secondary, and acknowledgement come back before the transactions can be complete. For the log only, the data will be a different queue, different path for the data to be applied. There are always threads running which are taking the data from the log and applying it behind the scene and making it readable. Yes. Good question. So the question is, do you see patterns of customers going and deploying a lot of asynchronous secondaries all in the same data centers because of performance? Yes, we see. I know at least a couple of customers who have gone and deployed one primary, four secondaries all in the same data center. They're using it as read scalability, read scalable solution. This is not a prime concern for the HADR. They're using failover cluster instances for HA and other technologies for DR. So this gives you flexibility on how you want to use it. The focus of this is HA and DR solutions, but once you have a secondary copy, you can make it readable and you can make it the way you want to use it. Yes, please. The question is replication. Are you talking about transactional replication? Okay. So the question is, if I'm using transactional replication, how can I make use of this? For transactional replication, you can make your publisher part of your availability group. So your availability group can fail over from between primary and secondary, and replication can take that into consideration. Okay, good question. Does my instance name changes? So over on top of this, what we have something called a availability group listener. And the availability group listener is what your application will connect to. So when the failover happens, the listener fails over from the primary to the new primary, whoever is the new primary. And that's called availability group listener. When you create an availability group, either through SSMS or the PowerShell or T-SQL, one step of that is creating the availability group listener. And that's the one that you're going to give it to your application that, hey, you connect to this name. Correct, yes. That's... So the question is about distributor, yes. The distributor cannot be part of availability groups. Yes, that limitation does exist. Okay, moving on. The prerequisites, mostly we touch base that everything has to be part of the same Windows cluster. So all the requirements of Windows cluster come into the picture. Units of failover, we talked about. One important consideration is that because if your previous solution was a database mirroring plus log shipping, that means you probably used log shipping for your DR. And what log shipping does, it takes a backup of your log and transfers it. But what does the backup of log do? It also enables truncating of the log. Does it? Right? So if you've removed log shipping because you went to a asynchronous secondary for your DR, that means you removed that log backup job as well. So just take that into account, that okay, that you need log backup jobs to be able to truncate the log. Whether you do it through log shipping or you do just regular transaction log backups, it's fine. And as you know, you can take transaction log backups on the secondary as well if you want to. One other thing is that log shipping provided the ability to have delayed apply on the secondary. And availability group secondaries cannot be delayed apply. And there are some new tools. There is an always on dashboard. There are new DMVs for you to help monitor the solutions. Okay, we need to quickly move on to this very interesting topic for called quorum considerations. Because it's a Windows cluster has quorum. And the simple thing to think about the quorum is irrespective of how many instances you have or irrespective of how many availability groups, replicas, how many databases you have, you need to think about the nodes. The nodes are the one which participate in the Windows cluster configuration, and they determine what will be your quorum and quorum determines the health. If the quorum is lost, the Windows cluster is down, availability group is down, and you need to do some manual actions to be able to bring back SQL Server service, and we'll talk about that. When you're designing a HADR solution that spans across multiple sites, and multiple sites means one Windows cluster across multiple sites, one very important thing to think about is this, the second point, bullet there, is if your DR site goes down or if there is a loss of connectivity between the two sites, the health of the primary site should not be compromised. Because if it is one Windows cluster, depending on how many nodes you have on one site or the other, having a site outage may cause another healthy site to lose quorum as well. And that's the basic goal of choosing right quorum models. And how do you do that? Do it in two steps. Step one, assign node votes. And we'll talk about which nodes should get vote, which nodes should not get a vote. And then pick the right quorum model to ensure that you have odd number of votes in the system. And by default, every node has a vote. Every node participating in a Windows cluster has a vote. That's by default. That's out of the box. Recently, a new enhancement has been done to Windows cluster. And that enhancement is available in this hotfix. And using that, you can assign votes to a node, or you can assign zero votes to a node. That means either one or zero. If you do that, any node that has one vote participating in the quorum, any node that has zero votes is not participating in the quorum. And we have also published the generic guidelines, what guidelines you should follow for assigning votes or not. What this comes to is that because we want to assign votes such a way that if the DR site goes out, or if you have a loss of connectivity between those two sites, the primary site should be happy, healthy, and running without any needing any manual intervention. That's the goal, right? Because primary site is your local HA. And that means you assign one vote to each node on the primary site and zero vote to the node on the DR site. And if we go back to our picture here that we had, the two nodes here will get one vote each on the primary site, and the DR node will get zero vote. That means one and one, we end up with total two votes for our Windows cluster. That is not ideal, right? Can anyone say why it is not ideal? Two votes in a Windows cluster, why it is not ideal? Because it is not odd, it is even. And what happens in even? If one goes down out of two, you have lost quorum. To be able to have quorum, you need to have more than half of the votes available in the Windows cluster. So we need odd number of votes. And for this solution, which is a purely non-shared storage-based solution, we have two quorum models possible. One is a node on file share majority or node majority. And if you use a file share, the solution will look like this. The file share has a vote, and the two nodes in the primary site have a vote, so making it three votes and odd. And the DR site node has no votes. Or if you choose to have a separate node to go with node majority, you can have an additional node within your Windows cluster on the primary site just for voting purpose and have three which is odd number of votes on the primary side. Okay, how do you change or view quorums? So, let us say you have a deployment in production and then you are going fine. How do I change or view my quorum nodes and votes? You have multiple tools. Not all tools provides all abilities. So, this should act as a handy reference, which tools to use to do what. To view quorum model, you have the most flexibility. You can use the failover cluster manager provided by the Windows server, or you could use PowerShell, you could use cluster.exe, you could use SQL Server tools like DMVs and the always on dashboard. If you want to change the quorum model though, you can do it through either Windows Server, all Windows Server tools. You cannot use SQL Server tools to change quorum model of a Windows cluster, and that should not be a surprise, right? To view the node votes, you can use PowerShell, cluster.exe or SQL Server tools. You cannot view the node votes in the failover cluster manager GUI. You can view node votes in the SSMS GUI. In the management studio, we have a GUI from dashboard where you can see the node votes. And to change the node votes, you have PowerShell or cluster.exe. So that's the way to look at this. Yes. Did you say Active Directory?
Yeah.
So the question is, quorum model does not require Active Directory. It is not the quorum models as per Windows cluster requires Active Directory, because all the nodes need to be part of the same Active Directory domain, and this is, I would say, a derivative of that, because it's a Windows cluster. Now you need, and all the systems use the same domain. So. Okay, so how do you do a disaster recovery if you have a failover of primary site of such a solution? That means the primary site is down. Now you need to fail over to the DR site. What happened if the primary site goes down? All the votes of the Windows cluster you had on the primary site, and they are also down. That means the Windows cluster has lost quorum. Now you need to do a couple of things. Force quorum on the DR site node, and then you will use SQL Server command, either SSMS or T-SQL, to do a force failover of the SQL availability group. And then, because now you are running from the DR side, depending on how long you want to run from there, how many nodes you have there, you may need to adjust your quorum model and or node votes. So, DR process is different from what it used to be in database mirroring. If you use database mirroring purely for DR, DR used to be only a database level command. Here, because the dependency of Windows cluster, you have Windows cluster involvement as well as SQL Server involvement to be able to complete the DR. Same thing, you have to rethink this when your primary site comes back. Now you have more nodes in the cluster, because those nodes you have forced quorum out of. Now those nodes will join the cluster, how they will join, when they will join, when you will fail over back to your primary site, you need to rethink those steps. And if you are a DBA, you work very closely with your Windows system administrators. If you are a Windows system administrator, this is your opportunity to learn more about SQL Server. Okay. Migrate. If you are using SQL Server database mirroring and log shipping as your old model of HADR, and you are trying to migrate to this new model, what are the thinking? How should you think through the process? You know, you are upgrading a tier 1 mission critical system. It should not be jumping through without proper plan and test. So what are the things that should come into your thought process and plan? How many of you, when you upgrade SQL Server, you also upgrade your hardware? How many of you do that as your general practice? Okay. And how many of you also upgrade the Windows Server at the same time? So that's the question you need to ask. Are we upgrading the Windows servers and as hardware at the same time, or we are going to reuse the hardware? If you're going to reuse the hardware, your migration path may be slightly different from if you're going to use a brand new hardware. Important thing from migrating from a database mirroring plus log saving based solution is that in that solution, you probably never ever had any talk with your Windows cluster admin people. You at the DBAs, the HADR solution was under the control of the DBA, and now you have to involve the Windows clustering people to provide you with a Windows cluster, to provide you ability to have a availability group listener registered in the DNS, and communication between cluster communication between the sites, and also the quorum discussion, and have the discussion before you actually plan to migrate the solution. And also what we have seen at customers, some customers think that, okay, we'll migrate the entire solution to the new HA as well as DR, and some customers think that, okay, let's migrate the primary data center first and then migrate the DR later on. And both doable. You just need to think what works best for you. Important thing is application connection string change. If you use database mirroring, and how many of you who use database mirroring had a failover partner in your connection string? Okay. If not, how did you manage to fail over when a database mirroring failover happened? Manually go and change the connection string? So now availability group listeners gives you a flexibility, or it makes your life easier, because it's one listener to think about, no matter who is the primary, who is the secondary. And if you have failover partner in your connection string, that will work as long as you have only one secondary. But if you have multiple secondaries, as in this solution, you should replace your connection string to use the availability group listener, because that makes the database level failover, the application stays transparent to a database level failover. Okay, this is a special case. Some people come and ask me, I want to use availability group and I want automated failover for my DR. And those customers have two things. Number one, they have good enough network in terms of both bandwidth as well as network latency to be able to support synchronous data movement between the sites. And they have one more thing, which is a third data center, where they put a file share witness, so that in case of a data center goes down, you can manage a automated failover. And see, in this case, all the nodes have votes. Okay. Any questions? I took some questions in between, so I hope that concept is pretty clear. Okay, you have a question. Yes. Sorry, what's the question? Yeah? How is the failover worse? Okay. So availability group listener is, if you look at the availability group resource, you'll see availability group listener also is dependent on the availability group. It's a DNS name. And that DNS name can have multiple IP addresses, one from each subnet. So in this solution that we discussed, you probably have two subnets at least, one in primary site, one in DR site. And the availability group listener will have both subnets registered for the DNS name and within the SQL server, it has an OR dependency, or within the Windows server, it has an OR dependency. And that OR dependency means only one IP address associated with the listener is up and running at any given is online at any given point in time. Whenever a failover of availability group happens, availability group listener is dependent on availability group, so it fails over along with it, and it takes not only the availability group listener name, but if the IP address has moved on to it, if it has moved on to a different subnet, the corresponding IP address becomes online, the other subnet becomes offline. That's all handled transparent to you. Sorry, can you please speak up a bit?
The question is about maintenance of secondary SQL server in the cluster. So if you take down the second row, then at this point in time, you definitely of the
Okay. Okay, good question. The question is, if the secondary is taken down for maintenance, how does availability group work, right? So if the secondary is down for maintenance, for example, you are applying a patch, then you are probably stopping it, restarting the service. Data movement stops. the secondary is still part of your availability group. Data cannot move from primary to secondary. The primary keeps track of LSNs, that I have not sent any LSN to this secondary from this onwards. And as soon as the secondary comes back, it will start sending automatically. Okay, good question. The question is, if my secondary was down for maintenance, so that means it has not received all the data, and then primary goes down. What do you think will happen? You have lost the data. It's plain and simple. You had somebody as your backup, and the backup is not up to speed, and you are down. That means that person will work with a minus data. The delta data is lost. However, if your primary is just server down, hopefully you still have the database, and when the primary comes back, you can go to the database and get the data back. So you may not have lost it completely, but for the sake of recovery at that point in time, you are working with a negative data, which means delta is not there. It's as simple as that. It's nothing magic can be done there. The secondary was down and you lost your primary. The question is it possible to prevent an automatic failover? Will not happen in this case. Automatic failover will happen only if the secondary is synchronized. So in this case, what will happen is the secondary, the state, if you go to the dashboard, you will see that the state is synchronizing, and that means the secondary is not up to speed. Okay? Or you could, the other option is to have, hey, you have multiple synchronous secondaries. If data loss is your primary attribute of your application, use multiple synchronous secondaries and only take one of those synchronous secondaries down at any point in time for maintenance purpose. And we know customers are using that today. If you come to the Wednesday talk tomorrow, you will see that model working there. Yes, sir. The question is, can we do the planned outage easily? You can do the planned outage very easily. The planned outage is you plan that you will now secondary site or secondary node will be your primary. You can do it from Management Studio or using T-SQL, and then you change the roles of now which one is the primary, and then you run your application from the primary. When you change the role of the availability group primary, you actually already also move the availability group listener also moves along with it. So you don't have to change anything on your connection string, irrespective of which data center or which subnet you are in now. And from there, you continue, and then you finish your maintenance on the primary and then do the reverse and fail back. Okay. Thank you. I'll move on to the next design pattern. You have a quick question? The question is, does the listener support analysis services? I do not know. Matt, do you know? If Matt doesn't know, I don't think anybody knows. No. Okay. I don't think. The availability group listener was designed for availability group, which is a SQL Server database engine. So link it this way: availability group listener, no availability group, no listener. Are you talking about reporting services or the SQL database for the reporting services? SQL database for the reporting services can be, it's a SQL database. You can use it the way you do for any SQL database.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do, it's like, if it's reporting services, then that's a different engine, and you have to deal with the availability of that separately. Okay. Thank you. I'll move on. So this solution combines shared storage within the data center, and it combines with non-shared storage for DR. And this is how it looks like. Now, this is not what it looks like. This is what it used to look like before SQL Server 2012 availability groups. How many of you use something like this? You have failover cluster instances plus database mirroring. Quite a few. Okay. So what you have here, you have shared storage, failover cluster at each site. And you have database mirroring between those. And for any planned maintenance within the sites, it's a failover cluster instance which is helping you. only case of a site outage, you will fail over to the DR site. And many of our mission critical deployments are running something like this. And the database mirroring could be synchronous or asynchronous depending on your application characteristics, your network characteristics, your data center, how far are they apart. What going forward with SQL Server 2012, you can take the database mirroring piece out and replace that with availability group for added advantages. And not to mention a lot, one of the major advantages is that your now DR site is completely can be usable for read purpose. Which earlier was not possible to do in a continuous readable manner. So, however, now you have one Windows cluster. Earlier you had two separate Windows clusters, each hosting a separate SQL cluster. Now you have one Windows cluster crossing over two sites, two independent SQL Server instances within that Windows cluster. And there is availability group between those. And the point to note here is that your local availability is at the instance level, because if node 1, which is farther left, if it dies, the instance fails over to the other node. But if the entire primary site is down, you have a DR. The DR is at the availability group level, which is a group of user databases. So there is a difference between a unit of failover for HA and unit of failover for DR. DR replica can be active secondary. And the key to this design is something called asymmetric storage. How many of you have heard of that term? Okay. Good. Very few. So I'll spend a bit of time on that. Any questions on this at the outset before I go into the details? Okay. So let's go to the details. The key is, if you used Windows cluster in any way before 1 year back, till about 1 year this time, the concept of asymmetric storage came about. Before that time, in Windows cluster, if you have shared storage, that shared storage must be visible to all the nodes in the Windows cluster. It was plain and simple. However, if you use this approach, you have one set of shared nodes and storage in primary site, another set of node and storage on the DR site. The nodes on the DR site cannot see the storage on the primary site. The nodes on the primary site cannot see the storage on the DR site. How do I build a Windows cluster across all this stuff? And there came the concept of asymmetric storage. So asymmetric storage is the traditional Windows cluster storage visibility. The storage is visible to all the nodes in the Windows cluster. And asymmetric storage is the situation when a subset of the nodes, a storage is visible to us, is shared by a subset of the nodes. Shared is the key word. Because if you have multiple nodes and no storage is being shared between more than one node, then it is not an asymmetric storage. It is just a simply non-shared storage group of machines. But because you are building failover cluster instances and availability group, you need shared storage, which is asymmetric shared storage, and that enables this this functionality. Does it make sense? Is it clear? So that's the key concept, how to get asymmetric storage functionality. If you're using Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, then it is already in there. If you are using Windows Server 2008, then there is a QFE available, and you can apply that QFE on all the nodes, and that way enables asymmetric storage for you. And I just defined what these two terms means. One other interesting thing to note is, look at this solution. There are two SQL instances, one at each site, and each SQL instance happens to be a failover cluster instance. The instance names could be the same. I'm talking about the instance name, not the network name. The instance name, they could be the same. And many customers use the same instance name because it was a standard. They use the similar naming convention, so that it was a standard. However, because now the instance is a Windows Server cluster service, they will show up if you go to failover cluster manager, those instances will show up there as here if you see the instance names are different, because now you cannot have the same instance names. So this is a key difference. If you are migrating from the old solution to the new solution, you must think about that, okay, my primary instance name and the DR instance names will be different. Similar thing for the file path. What is recommended is that for the two instances at two sites, you use the identical disk letters for your data and log volumes, and you can do that. A lot of people do not know that you can actually do it, but you can actually do that, because these are non-shared across sites, only shared within the site, so that they can have the same drive letter L, M, P, or whatever drive letters you use on your primary site, and if you have the similar LANs on your DR site, they can have the same drive letters. So if you go to Windows cluster, failover cluster manager GUI, you could see duplicate drive letter names, and it's okay. And we strongly recommend that you do that, so that when you have a data file which is on P colon something something here, and you add a file in the same folder, you have the same path on the DR side, so it will be created on the same path there, and there will be no confusion. Okay, and some of the slides that I'll use here is probably a repeat of the previous design pattern with subtle differences. I have repeated them here because if you are looking at the one design pattern in isolation, you have the complete view, but I will highlight only the subtle differences. And the difference, and this approach is also the same. The goal is that if the DR site goes down or the disconnect between the two sites, then you do not lose the primary site quorum. That's the goal. And again, you do the same way, you use votes and use quorum model to achieve that. And again, by default, every node has a vote. We assign zero votes to the DR nodes. Thereby, only two nodes on the primary side has vote. Two nodes, one vote is two nodes. And then again, it becomes a even number. You can use a file share witness or an extra node like that to be able to get a odd number in your quorum. Having said that, you have a added advantage of having a shared storage in your, even though it is an asymmetric shared storage in your Windows cluster. Now you can use an asymmetric shared storage as part of your quorum. You can use node plus asymmetric disk as your quorum, or you could use node plus asymmetric disk, or just asymmetric disk only quorum. If you know Windows server clustering quorum models, there are four quorum models: node majority, node plus file share majority, node plus disk majority, or disk only. So because you have shared disk here, even though this shared disk is asymmetric shared disk, you could still use an asymmetric shared disk as part of your quorum. This is slightly more complex because you cannot see that in the GUI. You cannot do that in PowerShell. You have to use only cluster.exe to be able to use or change that quorum model. And if you change that quorum model from, if you have a DR to change the quorum model, you have one extra step. So only if you have understood your quorum models and your Windows cluster and your communication very effectively, then you go for the asymmetric disk-based quorum models. Otherwise, node majority, node and file share majority will do just fine. Okay, so the votes will look like this. If you use a node and file share majority quorum model, if you see the DR nodes have no votes, is the same tools that you can use to view and change quorum model. I repeat it here with an added footnote, because if you are using asymmetric disk as part of your quorum, either as a disk only or node and disk majority, cluster.exe is your only tool to change the quorum model. If it is a DR, it is this very similar, because you have, if you have a DR, you have lost quorum on the Windows cluster. All the nodes which had votes and your file share probably are unavailable right now, and now you need to do some action on your DR side to bring service back. So what do? You force quorum for the Windows cluster on one of the DR site nodes, and then start the clustering service on the other node. Make sure that you have a cluster up in the first quorum state, and then you do availability group level for service. And then now that you are running on a DR site with a different set of nodes, with a different set, shared storage in your primary, you may need to rethink about your quorum model and the votes. Okay. If you are migrating from FCI plus DBM, FCI plus database mirroring solution to FCI plus availability group solution, some of the concepts, some of the considerations remain the same. Again, you need to think, are you upgrading Windows, are you upgrading your hardware? If yes, then take that into consideration. Talking to Windows clustering is easier here, because you already talked to Windows clustering people if you had an FCI plus DBM solution before. So you just teach them that, hey, you know, there is something called asymmetric disk. There is something called asymmetric disk as the quorum model. So there is some new learnings to be done to be able to best effectively utilize this, because Windows clustering has enhanced a lot. And I'm not talking about Windows Server 8. Windows Server 8, it is way more new enhancements. Even in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2, lots of enhancements have been done to Windows cluster specifically for always on functionality. So one needs to have that discussion with the Windows clustering team when you're building this system. The key thing here is that if you had a FCI plus DBM, that means your secondary was also a failover cluster instance. Now you want to upgrade that into FCI plus availability group model, your secondary need to be completely rebuilt. The reason for that, if you had a failover cluster instance on your secondary, that means you had a Windows Server failover cluster on your secondary and a separate Windows Server cluster on your primary. Now you cannot have that. You need to delete that Windows cluster that you had on your secondary and rebuild those nodes as part of the same Windows Server failover cluster that your primary. What happens if you delete a Windows cluster that is hosting your SQL Server failover cluster instance? The SQL Server failover cluster is not alive anymore or not functional anymore. And the SQL bits that you have on those is not functional anymore. The database that you had installed part of this is not functional anymore. So what you have to do is that the best way is re-image those nodes and delete that Windows cluster, rebuild those nodes, freshly install SQL Server 2012. Do not install SQL Server 2012 yet. Install whatever version of Windows and write QFEs on them. Make those nodes part of the same Windows cluster that your primary is. And this you need only on the DR side, because I'm hoping that you are continue to have the same Windows cluster that you had on the primary side. So what you do on your DR side is that you remesh, put the right version of Windows. Before installing SQL Server, you add those nodes part of your same Windows cluster that you have for your primary site, and now you install a new failover cluster instance on your on the DR nodes, and that means now you have a new SQL Server instance, which means that you have to take a backup from your primary site of your database, copy it over and restore it, and then enable availability group bit between those. So that's an extra thing you need to do if you are migrating from FCI plus DBM to FCI plus AG. Provided if your secondary was an FCI itself. If your FCI was a standalone, a lot of this is not required. Wonderful question. I was just waiting for that question. What's the reason why we did not just detach the database and then rebuild and reinstall everything and then reattach it back? The one challenge there is that when we attach, it does the recovery. So when you have attached a database, if you remember, whether it was database mirroring or availability group, the secondary is always in the restoring state, right? And now if you detach the database and now you want it to be secondary again, you attach it to a new instance and it is recovered. Now a recovered database cannot be part of an availability group, because availability group needs to be the secondary to be in the restoring state to be able to apply the log there. And that's the key. Because of that behavior of attach, We got to do all this redo stuff. When you restore the next time, you restore into the new instance, restore with no recovery, so that you can keep applying the logs, continue forward. Yes. So the question is, you can take a restore, by mean you mean restore on the secondary, okay. The secondary was in restoring state, and a database mirror, secondary mirror, you cannot take a backup from there. Make sense? The previous solution you had database mirroring, so your mirror was in the restoring state, you cannot take a backup of a database which is in the restoring state. And this is not the disaster, we are talking about you are building a solution from scratch. You are migrating from FCI plus DBM to FCI plus AG. Yeah, if your disaster happens, you are fine. You are forced to do that. But this is you are building without causing a disaster. Okay, so this is the summary of things we talked. We talked about three design patterns. Number one is, and they are in no priority order, they are just in place because they will give a perspective. One is multi-site failover plus instance using a shared storage based model using SAN replication behind the scene. Second one is completely non-shared storage based model using availability groups, multiple secondaries. And the third one is combination of failover cluster instances and availability groups, failover cluster instance providing you local HA and availability group providing you DR. And of course, slight variations are always okay. If you are, you can attend the session on Wednesday at this time. I strongly encourage you. The real deployments from production customers for the tier one mission critical system, they are going to come and talk about that, what they have deployed, what lessons they have learned, and what they found. With that, I am done, and I am here to take more questions. If more no questions, then thank you very much, and give me. And if you like the presentation, you give me good evaluation so that I can be back here next year.